Hi, this is Allison Sheridan of the No Silly Cast podcast, hosted at podfeet.com, a technology geek podcast with an ever-so-slight Macintosh bias. Today is Sunday, October 28th, 2007, and this is show number 118. Well, it's Leopard Week! Yay! I stood in line with my buddy Ron to buy Leopard at about 6 p.m. in California. But guess what? I'm not going to tell you about Leopard yet. I'm going to make you wait for it. Wait for it? Wait for it? Okay, later in the show, you'd be good and hang around. Anyway, I had a lot of fun last week. I got to be on the Mac Roundtable again. This time it was hosted by Tim Verporten from the Mac Review Cast, and we had Steve Stanger from the Mac Attack and Don McAllister from Screencast Online. It's a really nice format they've got going. It's very polite. He tries to get us to take turns, but I keep butting in and asking questions anyway. Check it out at macroundtable.com. Well, it looks like a couple of people came through with their homework assignment from last week. Len Charnoff took his two dogs walking and introduced them both to the No Silly Cast. I was really glad to see he made the effort on the homework assignment. But on a more serious note, Max told his uncle about podcasting. His uncle's into genealogy. He showed him podcasts and tried to explain it to him, but as of yet, his uncle hasn't gotten into it yet. Said he couldn't find any, even though Max easily found a whole mess of them. But hey, at least he planted the seed. Susan attended the shesgeeky.org session on open source in the enterprise. She mentioned the No Silly Cast and my case study of alternatives to Microsoft Office. She said there should be a link to podfeet.com and their wiki eventually. Thanks, Susan. That's very cool. Well, this week's homework assignment is for every one of you to put a comment up on iTunes for the No Silly Cast. I heard recently that having a lot of comments, even if they're not all good, can raise your rankings, and you become more visible in iTunes. Let's get No Silly Cast up there so it can be seen on the front page of the technology how-to. Wouldn't that be cool? It turns out getting on that front page is sort of a self-fulfilling prophecy, easy for me to say. Once you're in the most popular page, people can see you, so you get clicked more often, thus increasing your popularity. Now, it turns out each one of you can only write one comment. You can only vote once, essentially. So I need everyone to write a comment. Not just some of you. Everybody has to do it. We have to all pull together here. Listener James, even if you only write, "I can barely stand this podcast, don't even bother," that would really help. I'd appreciate the support. If you can just take a few minutes of your time and do this for me, I'd just really appreciate it. Thanks in advance for the support. Well, you know I'm all about JAlbum. I've been using them for years to make cool web-based photo galleries, and in just the last few months, I've been raving about the software, right? I came across something this week in JAlbum that scared the daylights out of me, and I wanted to give you a huge warning about JAlbum. I had a folder of pictures of my son's cross-country mates, all receiving academic letters. Not only are these kids fast, they're smart, too. All of the photos but two were of cross-country kids, but the other two were friends who were not in cross-country. I wanted to make a web album to post on the cross-country website, so I needed to remove those two photos before I made the gallery. I could have just manually moved them out, made the gallery, and then moved them back into the folder, but I thought it'd be easier if I just deleted them from the gallery view in JAlbum. This was a very bad idea. When you select a photo in the gallery view and hit delete, a warning comes up that says, "Are you sure you want to permanently delete this file from disk?" While this is very clear in what it's saying, it didn't even occur to me that they meant to permanently delete it from my disk. Why on earth would they do it that way? I can see that I might be misunderstanding that delete meant to put the original photo in the trash, but not that they would take my original photo and delete it forever from my disk. I know they were clear, but why would they do that? I still can't believe they have a feature like this in their software. I wrote to them middle of the week asking them why they would do that, but I haven't heard back from them yet. I'm hoping they give some explanation about how it's impossible to do it otherwise. So, the bottom line is be very, very careful with JAlbum and take them absolutely seriously and literally in their warnings, because they mean what they say, even when what they say is mean. Let's talk about reef balls. Now get your mind out of the gutter. I'm serious here. Turns out we have a bunch of problems that are causing destruction to the reefs around the world where fish and coral used to thrive. Global warming, hurricanes, excessive tourism, all these things are destroying an important part of our ecosystem. I learned this week in the Wall Street Journal that a guy named Todd Barber figured out how to make reef balls out of concrete that would turn into real coral reefs over time. You'd think this wasn't so hard. I mean, everybody knows about throwing, you know, sinking boats and stuff and going, you're a reef. But it turns out a lot of technology goes into figuring out the shape and makeup of these reef balls, and there's different materials that'll succeed in different environments. This guy quit his lucrative job to start a nonprofit organization called Reef Ball Foundation. And so far, they've cultivated about 4,000 reefs in 55 countries. One of the things I love about the Wall Street Journal is that while I'm reading all the great high-tech stories, I get tricked into learning really interesting things outside of my normal field of view. If you'd like to get the Wall Street Journal delivered to your home, or even subscribe to the online version, please click on the link on podfeet.com so I get the credit for it. I'm not enthusiastic because they're an advertiser. I'm enthusiastic because I love the content I get out of the Wall Street Journal. You know I'm telling the truth because I was enthusiastic about them before I started advertising. Niraj turned me on to a cool screen capture program that might just give Skitch a run for the money. It's called Jing, and it's from TechSmith, the guys who wrote the fabulous Windows video screen capture program called Camtasia Studio. Jing is a cross-platform application that works on Windows and Mac. It's universal, so it works on the PowerPC and Intel machines. Jing is yet another program to have launched when you log in. My Mac's taken about 2.5 hours to come up now with all my login items. But it has a cool way of waiting for you. It's sort of like the edge of the sun hovering in the upper right-hand corner of your screen, and when you go over it, a bunch of arms sort of shoot out. On the end of each arm is a little ball. One is for capture, one's for history, and one's for preferences. I tried to take a screen capture of the sun with the little arm sticking out, but I couldn't get a screen capture of it with Snipshot, Skitch, or even Jing itself. The arms kept nicking back in like antennas on a snail every time I tried to take a picture of them. Anyway, Jing lets you not only do screenshots, but also make little videos and to very easily share them with someone. After you take a screenshot, you can click Share and it uploads to the screencast website and puts the URL in your clipboard so you can instantly paste it into an email, a chat session, or even into your blog like I did in the show notes. You can mess around with the images in Jing before you share them, draw boxes, put text on them, or put in arrows. I like the interface very much, almost as good as Skitch. I'm a sucker for the drop shadow in Skitch. As you'll notice, all images on podfeet.com now have the drop shadow, courtesy of Skitch. I do like the ease of changing font sizes better on Jing, and both of them have the same ease of sharing with a web link. Jing wins for being able to do video, and wins big time for being cross-platform. I think you'll really like Jing, and I'm delighted to see TechSmith developing for the Mac. Maybe we'll get a version of Camtasia Studio for the Mac sometime soon. That would be awesome. Check out Jing at jingproject.com. Well, along with about 98% of the Mac community, I'm in love with Quicksilver as an application launcher. I know, Quicksilver does way more than launch applications, and I really do plan to go watch Mac Sparky's video screencasts of how to use Quicksilver. Haven't quite gotten around to that yet. But I don't actually use Quicksilver for much beyond launching applications right now. But I'm still in love with it. So when someone comes up with a new application launcher, they have to be compared to Quicksilver. This week's attempt to overthrow the king is called Sapiens from Donnelleschi.com. That link's in the show notes for sure. I can't even say it, much less spell it. Anyway, Sapiens is a completely different interface from anything I've ever seen before, and that's kind of cool. You launch Sapiens by moving your cursor in a circular motion on screen, which brings up a gorgeous circle with a whole bunch of application icons sprinkled about the circle. Sapiens is trying to guess what application you want next, and it puts the application, the one it finds most likely, in the center. If you simply hit a carriage return, then that's the application that launches. If it's not the application you want, but it is one of the other applications around the circle, you can simply click on the one you want and it will launch. But what if Sapiens didn't even get close in its deduction skills? All you have to do is type the first couple of characters of the application name you want, and any matching icons will come up in the circle. It's really fun to launch applications with Sapiens. The website suggests that you give Sapiens three days, to learn your habits so that it will begin to predict your next move. I gave Sapiens a week, and while it did predict my next application launch on occasion, it was probably only right maybe 1 or 2 out of 10 times. Probably 9 out of 10 times, the application was on screen, but just not the top pick, so it was easy to choose the one I wanted. The beauty of Sapiens was not outweighed by the fact that it takes longer to swing my cursor in a circle than just hitting a keystroke like Control Space to launch Quicksilver, and it's about the speed to launch for me. If speed is not your primary objective, you want a really cool-looking interface, and maybe it'll begin to predict your applications better than it did me, give Sapiens a try. Sapiens will set you back $19.95 US as a special introductory price. Well, I'm officially Windows-free in my house again. You may remember that years ago I decided to see what all the fun was about building a computer. I bought a case and a motherboard and a hard drive and memory and a wireless card and a graphics card and a DVD drive and even a stupid floppy drive, and I put it all together with my son Kyle. The idea was to build him a gaming PC. To my great chagrin, he loved it. And after a few months, I noticed his poor iBook was just getting dusty. This was horrible. He liked Windows better than the Mac. Then I got a great idea. I thought, what if it's the nice big screen and the keyboard and mouse that he really likes? I put in a KVM switch to test my theory. A KVM switch is this little device that lets you share a keyboard, monitor, and mouse along with your speakers for sound between two or more computers. You just hit a little keystroke on the keyboard to switch between the two computers. So this way, he could choose between the Mac and Windows. To my great joy, the KVM switch stayed on the iBook all day, every day after that, until he finally said, "Hey, Mom, could you get this PC out of here? It's just in the way." What sweeter words could a mother hear? It was fantastic. Well, I toyed with the idea of putting Linux on that machine, but it would make it the 7th computer in the house, and that seemed even a bit excessive for me. My friend Amy said she'd like to buy it, so I dusted it off to run all the necessary Windows updates before sending it to her. I figured that would take a while because it had been a long time since we'd used it. But guess what? The darn thing wouldn't boot up. Oh no, I'm finally getting rid of it. All right, so I pulled out the drive to check the connections, and I heard a rattle when I pulled it out. So, what's the first thing you do when you hear something rattle? You shake it to rattle it again, don't you? Yeah, if that disk was not trashed beforehand, I was going to make sure it was wrecked. What an idiot. Anyway, a friend of mine took it apart for me, and we found a screw rattling around inside the case. Nice job tightening down the screw, Seagate. Really appreciate that. Well, we put it back together, but even after reformatting it, it was just trashed. It wouldn't work. Fine. Now I had to scrounge up a new disk, and I'm sitting there going, okay, what do I do? Do I spend $50 to buy a disk to sell the PC for $250? I didn't want to do that. Well, luckily, my friend Ryan came through and gave me one of his spares. I put that bad boy in, and I went to install Windows. I put in my shiny hologram original Windows XP disk, and guess what? I could not find my license key. Oh, you gotta be kidding me. So Kyle and I scoured his room for hours looking for it. I bribed him with an offer of $20 if he helped me find it, which he interpreted as $20 if he helped me look for it, but I was very clear to say if he helped me find it. So we spent like, I don't know, 4 hours on and off looking for it. After about 2 weeks, we gave up. I did the unthinkable at that point. I called Microsoft and begged for help. You're not going to believe this. I was not even put on hold. My little friend Sanjay answered. We chatted for, I don't know, about 7 minutes, and he generated a new license key for me. Can you believe that? He He asked me to read this little X number on the inside rim of the shiny side of the original installed disk. I laughed, of course. I said, you know, son, I'm 49 years old. I haven't got a chance of reading that. So I eventually was able to get a microscope out and read it. I gave it to him, and he was able to generate me a key. He even volunteered to stay on the phone and cross his fingers. He said that. And until I got far enough through the installation process to make sure it worked. I was amazed. I have to give Microsoft a lot of credit for helping me out with this. While I was on the phone, and we were waiting for my Windows to boot up and everything, I couldn't resist asking Sanjay what he thought of Vista. To which he quickly replied, well, we're not using it yet. Wow. So anyway, back to my sales story. I finally installed Windows XP Service Pack 1, then I did 41 updates, followed by the Service Pack 2 update, followed by 58 more updates, and in only 4 reboots, I thought it would be worse, I got the machine fully up to date. Of course, I loaded Firefox on it, made it the default browser, and made her homepage podfeet.com. I gotta have my fun, don't I? Then I went out and I loaded OpenOffice for her, and I renamed the icons to Excel, Word, and PowerPoint. I put OpenOffice in parentheses after the fake name so she would still know it was OpenOffice. She was actually excited about this when I told her. She said, wow, I'm open to trying new things. This sounds like fun. I'm not a big power user at home anyway. Why not? Well, she came over to pick it up, and I toted it out into her shiny Honda. I exclaimed, oh, you are my people. You have a Honda. To which she replied, don't you remember? You already gave me Honda Bob's phone number, and my father just waxed it for me. Gee, am I getting a little predictable? Well, you know I love Honda Bob's mobile service. Since he drives to my house to fix and maintain my cars, what's not to love? And now you know that I don't just sing his praises on this show because he's an advertiser. It's because I really believe in his service, and I really want all of my friends to have the benefits of fabulous car care combined with an incredibly tailored service model, and you get bad jokes for free. If you'd like Honda Bob to come to your house in the LA or Orange County areas of California, please give him a call at 562-531-2321 or send him an email at hdabob@aol.com. You can also check out his informative website at hdabob.com. Remember, it would be like asking me to work on Windows to ask him to work on anything but Hondas or Acuras. HDA Bob's mobile service is not affiliated with Honda, Acura, or Honda Worldwide. All right, I guess you've waited long enough. All you really wanted to hear about this week was Leopard, right?
All you really wanted... No, I figure most people are going, you know, I'm going to do that later. You guys have fun out there on the bleeding edge and come back later and tell us how it is. Well, Bart and I both picked it up last night, along, of course, with my friend Ron. Bart, the little rat, got it like 8 hours ahead of us because he's on the other side of the pond, as he says. So he got a head start, which was really frustrating because I was at work and here he is pinging me going, oh, look, it does this. Oh, look, it does that. Well, anyway, his punishment is that he's going to do a review of his first impressions of Leopard, and so am I, but I'm not listening to his review before I'm giving you mine. Now, this could do one of two things. Either it's going to be fascinating how the two of us look at it completely differently, or it's going to be really dull because we're going to say the same exact things and repeat all over each other. Well, just in case it's the latter boring case, I'm going to go first, so I'm the interesting one. He's the boring one. We'll see how that works out. So Ron and I got in line around 6 o'clock last night, or Friday night, I should say, and we were greeted to a line of about 150 people at that time. It was more than we saw in line a week after the iPhone came out, but I guess a lot fewer than there were for the iPhone launch day. But yep, we were out there with the neckbeards and everything. Luckily, the people around me weren't neckbeardy people, but anyway, we had some fun. I did take the opportunity to pimp my podcast and passed out a lot of cards, so that was good. There was a kid behind me in line. He was really cool. I really liked this guy. He was maybe 15 years old, and he had his dad and his sister there waiting with him, and he was waiting to get his first Macintosh. His PC had died a while ago, and he decided to wait until Leopard came out and get his Mac right then. This kid had saved up enough of his own money to buy a 24-inch iMac as his first Macintosh. Yeah, I bet he's having fun today. Anyway, he promised he'd check out the podcast, so I hope we'll hear from him. I didn't catch his name, but I hope he'll send us a note and tell us what he thinks of his switching experience. Now, I think this next thing, when we finally got into the store, we were let in chunks of 25. We walk into the store, and all of the salespeople burst into applause. They're hooting, they're waving, they're clapping like we're coming down the red carpet kind of thing. Now, I read a couple of blogs. I guess this was a thing they did across the country or across the world in all the Apple stores. But it was just really fun. They seemed genuinely excited that we were there. So that was pretty fun. Plus, we got free T-shirts, which is always good. The one thing I should tell you about is the box has really cool holograms on it. Like the X is kind of floating in outer space with like quasars or something floating around behind it. That's got to be good. You pay extra for that. So anyway, Ron and I got back and met up with Steve, and we started the installation process. Now, you know me. I didn't do all the stuff you're supposed to do. I did run a backup of my home directory, but that was about it. Didn't fix disk permissions or do a full clone or any of that kind of stuff. And, you know, I was thinking about doing it on the G4 iBook we have laying around, but that just seemed wimpy. I figured, go for it. Let's just do it and see how bad this could be. Now, my idea was I wanted to do an archive and install so that I would, be able to pull over my preferences and that sort of thing. And I did not want to do a clean install. So I double-click the installer, and it asks for my password, and I give it to it, and it says to reboot. Okay, great. Comes up, and it asks me what language to go in, and I said English. And then it wanted to check the disk to see if it was okay, but I'm not going to wait for it to do that. That's going to take forever. So I told it to skip, and it started to install. It didn't ask me any questions. It didn't say, what kind of install do you want to do? So I'm sitting there going, good thing I started on a Friday night, because that'll give me time to find all my installation keys. Oh, I hope I backed all those up and all my, oh man, that my CD-based applications, I hope I can find all those. Man, I think some of those are at work. And oh well, we sat down and had pizza while we watched the two machines barrel along doing the installation. Imagine my surprise when it rebooted and everything I had was still there. I was just in Leopard. My background screen, my mail, all my accounts, everything was fine. And it got me thinking. I was thinking, well, where's the real installer? You know, I mean, where's the one where you say archive and install, or you wanted to do a clean install? When does that question come up? Well, it turns out if you just double click on the installer, you're taken to archive and install, I guess, is the default. And then there's another icon that says optional installs, and that's where you can go in and pick other kinds of applications and or ways of installing, I guess. So anyway, I got lucky, so that was pretty good. And it only took about an hour to do it. So what do I like about it? CoverFlow is probably one of the coolest things. So now you have four ways of viewing your directory. So you used to just have the icon view, the list view, and the column view. Well, now you can see your files in CoverFlow. So you can flip through them. And if they're JPEGs, you see what the picture looks like. If they're movies, I guess you see the beginning of the movie. I don't know if I've looked at any movies yet. And you can flip through them and look at them that way. But the real fun comes in with Quick Look, which is where you can, if you are on a particular file in CoverFlow or in the regular one of the other views, if you hit the space bar, it launches the file kind of in a viewer sort of thing. It's really weird. You can look at Excel files, Word files, JPEGs, watch movies. You really don't have to launch the applications to see what you're looking for. You know, obviously, if you wanted to manipulate the file, you would have to. But if you would just want to bring up a PDF to read a receipt number or something like that, or get your tracking ID for something you'd saved, it's real easy to do that. I told you that kid in line was going to come up in conversation again. He's the reason I know to hit the space bar to launch that. He'd read ahead on that. This kid's going somewhere. I can't wait to hear back from him. Sure hope he writes in. Anyway, I don't know how else to trigger Quick Look to come up, because that's the only way I know how to do it is with the space bar. Oh, here's a fun thing about Leopard. One of the things that's a big hassle is trying to find devices and shares on your network that you're supposed to be allowed to get to. I don't know about you, but we share all of our folders and stuff across all the different Macs in the house, and we have one PC in the house who's leaving soon. But anyway, it's always a hassle trying to find the right files, trying to find the directory, trying to get it to come up. It's a real hassle. But now you actually just see them in your list of devices on the left-hand side. Sort of like if somebody has their iTunes directory being shared in iTunes, you just simply see it there. So the funniest thing they did for PC volumes, the icon they used is a PC with the blue screen of death on it. Is that sweet or what? I just love that. It's really cool. Somebody put online someplace, I forget the link, they had a whole bunch of PC directory shares, and they brought it up in CoverFlow, so you see all of these PCs flying by with the little blue screens of death on it. It's just sweet. That's good stuff. I put a picture in the show notes so you can take a look at that. That was really fun. Let's see, a lot of people have been talking about this stack thing. That's where in your dock, if you can put a folder of files, and if you click on it, it kind of brings them out as this kind of, I don't know, jack-in-the-box, boingy-looking thing. But you can also set it to be kind of a grid of the different files in there. Well, I didn't think that'd be useful. That just sounded kind of dorky to me, mostly because I keep about 2,000 things in each folder, and I don't keep them very well organized. Well, I did find one place where this is useful. And by the way, I keep my dock on the side, and I think that made it automatically trigger in the grid mode. Not sure, because I didn't tell it to do the jack-in-the-box versus the grid mode. But anyway, one of the things that was in there automatically was a folder called Windows Applications. So it noticed that I had Parallels running, or I had Parallels available, and that in there I had my Windows Applications, and it made a little grid for me when I clicked on that. So I was able to, you know, what's really going to happen is you don't really want Windows. There's an application in Windows you want. Like I happen to have to run Internet Explorer 6 to get to some junk at work. So what I can do now is I can just click on that folder and click on IE and I'm in. I don't have to launch Parallels, tell it which Parallels install I want because I've got CentOS and I've got Ubuntu and I've got Windows on there. It's going to go right into Windows and right into Internet Explorer. So I thought that was pretty cool. I thought that was all right. One other thing I noticed was Leopard's really fast. I mean, this thing just screams. I mean, it's just things pop open and they snap really, really quickly. And I thought, okay, that's my imagination. Yeah, I'm just all excited because I got a new toy and you know how I get. But then Ron looks over him and he goes, is it just me or is this really fast? And I don't want to snake Bart here, but he writes to me, he goes, is it just me or is this really fast? So I think it's fast. I mean, I don't want to say smoking fast, but it's just snappy. It just feels like it feels crisp. So that was pretty exciting. I had a lot of fun. Went into iChat and I saw listener James out there. And, you know, the crazy nutty one, the one that starts his emails to me with, yo, woman. Well, anyway, it turns out he had also stood in line and got his copy of Leopard and he was up ready to go. So I said, hey, let's try that screen sharing thing you can do. This thing is amazing. So you're in iChat. There's a pull-down menu where you can say initiate or request to screen share. Now, I didn't know what it was going to do, but when I hit it, it sent a request to him asking him if I could see his screen. Well, the little idiot said yes. But the best part was when you initiate the video or when you initiate the screen sharing, it automatically turns on audio chat with the other person. Which kind of makes sense because you figure if you're going to call, if you're going to try to see their screen, you're probably going to want to talk to them. Well, so I launched this and instantly when it comes up on screen, I hear him laughing because he realizes what he just did. So he and I got to talk while we poked around and I started moving his applications around. And then I started kind of, well, you know, I kind of start messing with him, started a chat to someone where I was going to say nasty things on his behalf, but he made me stop. No fun. Anyway, I thought it was a great sport, actually, to let me do that. Notice I didn't let him share my screen. Just not that dumb. But the response time was extremely good, sharing between the two of us. I mean, I was able to just move things around really quickly and type on his screen, and it seemed a lot better than any kind of VNC stuff I'd done before. Now, today yesterday and Saturday, I tested it with BART all the way across to Ireland, and it was definitely slower, but it was not unusable at all. When I mentioned it was slower, BART said, "Well, it is a big puddle, you know." I guess I should give him a turn to talk. Let's hear his first impressions.
Hey folks, this is BART from bartbouchas.ie, back again on the NoSillaCast. Did you miss me last week? Okay, so if you haven't been living on an entirely different planet, I'm sure you've noticed by now that Apple have dropped their new operating system on us, so baby Leopard has been born. Allison was quite grumpy that I got Leopard a whole 8 hours before she did, but hey, finally there's some sort of advantage to living in Ireland, because when it comes to Apple stuff, we generally get the short end of the stick. We had to wait extra weeks, entire weeks, for our iPod touches, and as for the iPhone, I'm still waiting. Okay, so I had really great fun with Leopard because, according to the Apple website, my package wasn't due to arrive until October the 30th, so I wasn't expecting it. Then at about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, the lady from reception came down to my office and went, "Look, a package for you!" And when I opened it up, what was inside? Only a very, very shiny box which contained OS X Leopard. And no, I really do mean it. The box is exceptionally shiny. Sort of got a holographic effect that makes the big X look like it's floating. And when you turn around on the back, all the things that are shiny are actually sort of silver and fluorescent and stuff. It's an exceptionally shiny box and it looks really cool. Of course, in the grand scheme of things, it doesn't matter at all what the box looks like. However, I still find it very reassuring that Apple have taken the time and the effort to really, you know, do a good box. If they've shown as much care to everything else in the operating system as they've shown to the box, then we're in for one hell of a ride. Okay, so after I'd gotten over the fact that my Leopard did actually arrive on time, bragged to Allison about the fact that I had Leopard and she hadn't, wandered around the office showing it to everyone going, "Hee hee hee, look at me, I have Leopard." When I finally got home from work and managed to start installing it, the first thing that impressed me was, in fact, the installer. Now, OS X has never had a bad installer. In fact, it's probably had the best installer I've ever come across. But it had one sort of minor flaw in that it wasted your time telling you stuff you really didn't care about. I mean, while it's installing, do you really care that it's currently extracting the files for the FreeBSD subsystem and that it's then installing the files for the FreeBSD subsystem and then running the final installer for the FreeBSD subsystem? I don't know about you, but I never really cared about that. They've gotten rid of all that sort of extra pointless information that's rather intimidating to the non-computer experts, and instead they've replaced it with a very, very straightforward interface. You have a really cool shiny background with your fancy Aurora thing on it. You have one window on it, which contains basically two things, a giant big progress bar and an estimated time. And the progress bar just ticks along and the time just ticks down, and that's that. No point in overcomplicating things. Okay, before I go any further, I think I need to explain something I decided to do. I have three Macs at my disposal. I have a dual G5 in work. I have my MacBook Pro, which I'm recording this on, and then I have the very first Mac I ever bought, which is my first generation Mac Mini. It's a little G4. So, if you wanted to give Leopard the hardest possible test, where would you install it? You got it. I stuck it on the old G4. So this thing is quite a few years old at this stage. It's quite a few processor architectures behind when you think that since the G4 we've had the G5, then we had the 32-bit Intel processors, and now we have the 64-bit Intel processors. So this thing is definitely far from cutting edge. So I figured if Leopard runs well here, Leopard's going to run exceptionally well on any modern Mac hardware. So bearing that in mind, what are my first impressions? Well, the first thing I'll say is it runs faster than Tiger did. I have crappy old hardware, and yet I've upgraded my operating system and it's gotten faster instead of slower. How many times has that happened to you with Windows? Yeah, me neither. Never had that happen either. The other thing to note is that my little Mac Mini has a whopping 32 megabytes of graphics RAM. And yet it can do all the cool shininess and all the fancy animations and doohickeys that make Leopard what it is, and indeed made Tiger what it was. And, you know, Vista, you want the Aero cool thing, which is really not quite as cool as OS X. Oh, that'll be 512 megs of RAM, I believe. Hang on a sec. Apple can do equally as shiny, if not more shiny, on 32 megs of graphics RAM? Maybe Microsoft needs to optimize their code a little. What do you think? Okay, I'm sorry, I couldn't resist. Really, Leopard means some Microsoft bashing is well and truly in order, because when you take Vista in one hand, Leopard in the other hand, yeah, it's quite clear which one wins. It's a pussycat. Okay, right, back on topic. So, what did I notice about OS X Leopard? Well, the first thing I noticed was that the dock still looks stupid as a shelf. I thought it would look silly when Steve gave us the demo in his Steve note, and I still think it looks silly today. Thankfully, if you're a smart person and you don't keep your dock at the bottom of the screen, but instead put it to either the left or the right, the nasty evil shelf disappears. Instead, you basically get a more modern version of the old Tiger dock. So instead of being completely see-through, it's sort of gone black. In fact, actually, I think the whole of leopard is sort of like Nemo tiger, if you get what I mean. It's all gone sort of dark sort of colours and, well, a basic lack of colour. Your menu bar has lost all the fancy blues and stuff. And it's, I don't know, it's quite dark. Now, it's very, very pretty, but it's definitely kind of a sort of an emo version of OS X. Now, I've only had this thing for a day, so needless to say, I haven't got anywhere near going through all 300 features that Apple are claiming. Instead, what I've basically spent my day doing is installing all my applications and making sure they still work in Leopard. Now, this is where I have some good news. Leopard's compatibility with Tiger is bloody good. I was worried about quite a few things, but there were three that I was particularly worried about, and one of them actually didn't work out too well. So the first one is my keyboard. I'm very, very attached to my ergonomic keyboard, and unfortunately it generally doesn't play particularly nicely with Macs. I've discovered through a lot of experience that it's very important that you don't plug the keyboard in until after you've installed the drivers. That was certainly the case with Tiger. So I figured I'd do the same with Leopard. So I did the Leopard install using one of the standard Apple keyboards. Then I stuck in the CD for my Logitech drivers, installed them, rebooted the machine, plugged out the standard keyboard, plugged in my keyboard, and the drivers, which had installed without any errors, and had installed the appropriate preference pane within the control panel thing, didn't work. I brought them up and they said, no Logitech devices detected, despite the fact that both my keyboard and mouse were plugged in. So at that point, I was a little bit worried. So I started by uninstalling the drivers and then going a-Googling. And I discovered that someone has done up a mapping for UK-style keyboards on the Mac, which caused no end of trouble. When I stuck that on, that was actually enough because OS X, entirely of its own accord, without any help from me, had figured out that the menu, that the volume buttons and stuff on my fancy keyboard were indeed volume buttons. They all work, and then the fancy key mapping I found by Googling maps all my keys correctly. So without needing my drivers, I've ended up with my keyboard working perfectly. So to be honest with you, I've been lucky. Okay, so be careful of funny hardware. Then the other two bits of hardware I was worried about were my printer and my scanner. The printer, as seems to be the case with Mac, and I should probably have expected this, it absolutely worked perfectly. I didn't even have to install any drivers. Plugged it in, went to the print menu, went add printer, went, how's about this one that I found on the USB drive? Would you like to install that? And I went, yup. And it just worked. I really wish more things on computers were like that. The last thing I was worried about, and I was genuinely worried about it, was my scanner. I'm very attached to my scanner, and I have an awful lot of photographs still to scan in, so I really needed that to work. Otherwise, I would have had to keep one of my Macs on Tiger until I was finished scanning. I was worried about it because the Epson software is a bit hacked together looking, really, to be honest with you. But anyway, stuck in the CD, installed it, rebooted, powered on the scanner, fired up the software, scanned in a photograph, and it worked like a charm. That stage, I knew I was going to be okay on Leopard, but there were still plenty of applications I'd be grumpy if I had to do without. So, basically, I started installing all my favourite applications and testing them one by one. And, basically, I'm just going to give you a list now of all the applications that I've installed and tested and that work on Leopard. Okay, so the start of my list is AdiumX, works like a charm, Thunderbird, works like a charm, Firefox, works like a charm, iStat Nano, which I'm exceptionally attached to, works absolutely fine, picks up all the sensors that you had, etc, etc, etc. Then the Unarchiver, which is a freeware utility that just takes the socks off that stupid stuff at Expander thing, which I hate with a passion. That works like a charm. MPlayer OS X works just fine. VLC works just fine. Flip for Mac, the free version, works just fine. IGTD works just fine, thankfully, or I wouldn't have gotten anything done. ImageWell works just fine, Teleport works just fine, Caffeine, which is that cool little app I use to stop my Mac going to sleep when I don't want it to, that works just fine. Jellyfish and SSH Agent, which I would absolutely die without in work, they work just fine. Transmit, which is absolutely fantastic, it works just fine. Password Vault works just fine. And the backup utility I use, rsync, A-R-R-S-Y-N-C, it also works just fine. So as far as I'm concerned, all these sort of apps that would sort of cause me serious trouble if they didn't work, they all work on Leopard. So I've been lucky. Apparently there's some apps that don't work on Leopard. I believe Super Duper is one that has a lot of people annoyed. I don't really know why, because I'm pretty sure Super Duper uses rsync under the hood, just like rsync does. Yet rsync seems to work just fine. Now, I do have to say I didn't use rsync to back up my OS. I only used it to back up my data. But that's all I've ever used rsync for. So for my uses, all this stuff is working absolutely fine. Of all the other features on Leopard, I've really only sort of dipped into them and there's not much I can say. apart from the fact that I can say that Spaces is a great idea, but so far its implementation is, to use Alison's word, hinky. I'm still trying to figure out the exact steps to reproduce the hinkiness, but basically, at the moment, every time I click on an icon in the dock, it's sort of like flipping a coin. Will I stay in this space? Will I go to another space? Will it actually bring up the application I asked for? I'll give you an example. I'm just going to click on Firefox. I clicked on it once. Ah, there we go. It's brought up Adium. Clicking it again. Now it's brought up Thunderbird. Clicking it again. Oh, finally, I have a Firefox window. Although I went from one space to another and straight back again in a very odd sort of way. It's just not reliable at all. It's like playing Russian roulette every time you want to click on the dock. I really think that if they get Spaces working perfectly, it will be absolutely fantastic. But right now, it's just buggy as hell and it's really quite annoying. Okay, there's absolutely insanely more I could talk about, but I think it's about time I wrapped up. So I'll just give you a quick summary. Shiny box, good. Installer, good. Dock, good. Spaces, bad. Lots and lots of apps being perfectly compatible, good. Well, I'm sure you're going to hear lots more about Leopard from me and Alison and, well, pretty much everyone in the entire Mac podcasting sphere. So for now, I'm going to leave it here and say, until next time, happy computing.
Well, I think that was a pretty fun way for us to share our experiences with Leopard. Hey, you got two reviews for the price of one. I think it's pretty interesting that we both came out so positively on Leopard. You know, we're both willing to say when things, are junk. We'll see how we feel about it after a week of hard use. We'll see if we're that bullish on it next weekend. To close out the show, I wanted to tell you that I finally finished one of my homework assignments. By popular demand, I created a short tutorial on how to make a pivot table in Excel. I put it in a link in the sidebar, so go look for it. For now, it's just the pivot table tutorial, but I'd like to do more Excel tips over time. Just got to get around to writing them up. I love the tool. Margaret already gave it a whirl and then applied her newfound learning on a real spreadsheet of hers where it actually solved a problem. The main thing about pivot tables to remember is just play around with them. Drag the fields around. Just see what happens. You start to see the pattern of how they work after a while if you just mess around. Let me know what you think, and if you have more Excel tips or things that you'd like to learn about, let me know what confuses you, and I'll try to break through the confusion. That's going to wrap it up this week for the Big Leopard Weekend. Please keep all the great feedback coming in to Alison at podfeet.com. If you get inspired, make an audio recording for me to play on the show, too, by sending it to nosillacast@gmail.com. And don't forget your homework assignment to go put those comments up in iTunes. Thanks for listening, and stay subscribed.